Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
It's a brand new week of Drive Time Sports, and it's right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. I love Mondays. Although we are near the dog days of summer, we have NBA free agency to pull us through for the next couple of weeks. We had the draft last week, gearing up for free agency this weekend, so there is plenty of NBA to chat about, but also a lot going on in Major League Baseball. And this is a very fun time if you're a fan of baseball. You know, we get to the back half of June, All-Star Games right around the corner. You're starting to see the pretenders and contenders separate. A lot of storylines, who's going to be buyers, who's going to be sellers. And this year has been unique in the sense of epic statistical performances. I mean, the Dodgers continue to do things in this regular season that we have never seen before. Cody Bellinger was on a tear that you would have to go all the way back to Babe Ruth to find someone who had put up the fielding putouts and the amount of home runs and RBIs that he had put up in like a 50-game span. I mean, the Dodgers have been incredible, and over the weekend, they did it again. They had three rookies walk off consecutive nights in victories over the Colorado Rockies, who were playing great baseball. I mean, a very pivotal series, and the Dodgers find ways to come out. I mean, they have been so much fun to watch this season. You jump over to the American League, the Yankees have one of the most entertaining lineups in the game. They've won 8 out of their last 10, yet they only hold a 4.5 game lead over the Tampa Bay Rays. The defending World Series champion Boston Red Sox would not be in the playoffs if they were to start today. I mean, that's the kind of baseball season it's been up to this point. The Minnesota Twins, they're 8 games up on the Cleveland Indians in the AL Central. You take a look at some of the other National League races, the Atlanta Braves, they're having issues pitching. Their AAA pitching is unbelievable. They just sent Mike Folty down to the minor leagues, and they still hold a 6.5 game lead over the Philadelphia Phillies because their offense is so dynamic with young kids. The Cubs and the Brewers, a half game separate those two right now. The Cardinals are 2 games out of the Central. The Reds, who are in last place, are only 5.5 out. Baseball has been so entertaining this year up to this point. I can't wait to see what the second half of the season holds. Maybe one of the more entertaining baseball seasons that I can remember in quite some time. I mean, every night you take a look at some of the scores that will have impacts moving forward. We're 77, 78 games into the season. 79 if you're looking at the Dodgers record, because they have 54 wins to 25 losses. I mean, this team has played lights out. So we will talk a lot of Major League Baseball. It is Monday. We will be joined by Bill Lasky, former Major League pitcher, now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants. He's kind enough to talk with us each week. I always look forward to Bill's segment here on the show. That's coming up next segment here on Drive Time Sports. Let's take a look at some of the other news and notes coming out of the national scene, and we will begin with the NBA. I don't know how much this trade is actually going to affect the Atlanta Hawks, but I think it will affect the Portland Trailblazers. Evan Turner has been sent to the Atlanta Hawks in exchange for Kent Bazemore. I think Bazemore will help the Blazers. Evan Turner, career really hasn't panned out. Remember back when Turner came out of college? He's coming out of Ohio State. And there was that debate, is it John Wall or is it Evan Turner? Well, up until John Wall tore his Achilles, I think that was a pretty simple debate. This is now 5 teams that Evan Turner has played on since coming out of college. The trade will represent pretty much tit for tat as far as the salaries. Turner signed a 4-year, $70 million contract, carries a cap hit of $18.6 million next season. Bazemore is set to make $19.2 million next season. after opting into the final year of his contract. That is a terrible deal. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care. You can give me the CBA ramifications. You can give me the floors. I don't care anything about it. I don't care if the cap raised. You cannot justify Kent Bazemore making $19.2 million next season and Evan Turner carrying a cap hit of $18.6 next season. You cannot justify that. Now, with that being said, I'm not saying that there's no value in Bazemore. I'm just saying, taking a look at a cap-neutral deal, I like Portland getting Bazemore a little bit more than I like Atlanta getting Turner. I don't know where he fits in Atlanta. I got to be honest. I thought Atlanta did very, very well in the draft. You get a guy like Cam Reddish, you get DeAndre Hunter. I don't think it could have worked out any better for Atlanta. Obviously, you try to get rid of some of that roster redundancy, and you want to make a cap-neutral deal because you're not going to be able to dump Kent Bazemore, at least not yet. You probably would have had to have waited to at least the trade deadline. And like I said, you just have some of that roster redundancy. Curious to see where Turner actually fits in. I mean, if you take a look at his averages, 6.8 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists throughout 2018-2019. It's not as if the Hawks are going to be competing anyways. Bazemore, on the flip side, I think he really, really helps Portland. They figure out a way to rectify what looked like a terrible deal to begin with. And again, I know you can try to justify it with the ramifications of the cap. I don't want to hear it because you can't justify it. I don't care what the floor was. I don't care what the cap was. But I'll tell you what Bazemore does for Portland. Add some depth on the perimeter. Al-Farouq Aminu is going to be hitting free agency. Bazemore averaged 11 points in each of the last 4 years with Atlanta. Like I said, highly overpaid, but at the same time, you can use him two ways on the court, especially if you're contending. And I think Portland expects to be right back in the mix of the Western Conference next season. Here's some good news for BYU. Jimmer Fredette has signed a summer league deal with the Golden State Warriors. Not surprising. Fredette, of course, has had a lot of success overseas. He comes on over, plays a couple of games with the Phoenix Suns, played 6 games with Phoenix after playing in China. Averaged 3 points, 1 assist, played like 10 minutes per game. Limited, very brief stint, but one that caught the attention of the Warriors. And this is good news for Jimmer. I don't know that Jimmer is ever going to land a solid spot playing a guaranteed contract in the NBA once again. And if you say that, BYU fans get livid, and I don't understand why. Just speaking factual. I get that this guy did some amazing stuff when he was at college. And that's not a slight in saying that he's never going to land a guaranteed contract in the NBA. I just don't think he is. I don't think he has a full guaranteed contract again in the NBA. Jimmer's getting up there in age. Wasn't as if this was yesterday he was leaving BYU. Nonetheless, Golden State, they'll have Jimmer. So there you go, BYU fans. You can watch the Golden State Warriors when they head to Las Vegas here relatively soon for the summer league. Outside of that, not a lot happening in the national sports front, although the odds makers are saying that Kevin Durant is currently favored to land with the Brooklyn Nets. And other sources are talking about Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving teaming up in the Eastern Conference. That would make sense, right? I pay attention to the odds makers. And right now, if you look at Kawhi Leonard, top 3 teams, Raptors, Clippers, Lakers. If you take a look at KD, it's really the Nets and the Knicks. It's as if everybody knows that KD is not going to return to the Golden State Warriors. We already know that Kyrie's not going back to Boston. So that's something to pay attention to over the next couple of weeks. Again, interesting storylines developing out of the NBA free agency realm. Let's move back over to Major League Baseball, and we'll take a look at the schedule of games that we have coming up this evening. Everything will begin in the 5 o'clock hour. Short slate of baseball action. It'll start with Toronto on the road to take on the New York Yankees. CC Sabathia will toe the rubber. We get the Mets at the Phillies. Steven Matz against Zach Eflin. I like that matchup. The White Sox will travel to meet the Red Sox at 5:10. Also, we get Kansas City at Cleveland. 6 o'clock tonight, Julio Teheran against John Lester. Again, I'm all in on it. Atlanta and Chicago, 6:05 start time of that contest. Another excellent pitching matchup. Dodgers at Diamondbacks. Clayton Kershaw versus Zach Greinke. Sign me up. Nightcap tonight, it'll be the Rockies and the Giants. John Gray against Drew Pomeranz. That game will be on national TV on ESPN tonight. Giants playing host to the Rockies. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Local sports is coming your way in just a moment. And again, we'll be joined by Bill Lasky. We'll talk Major League Baseball. That's all coming up on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And the Emery County Search and Rescue will host the 10th annual San Rafael Classic Triathlon on Saturday, July 13th at the Huntington State Park. Working as the main fundraiser for the County Search and Rescue team, the San Rafael Classic Triathlon provides a family-friendly and competitive atmosphere for multi-sport athletes of all skill levels and abilities. Offering the typical triathlon events of swimming, running, and cycling, the San Rafael Classic also provides different options for those interested in competing. For those not interested in swimming, the event will host a dualathlon, which consists of running and cycling. For those who do not like to run, the event will host the aqualathon, which combines swimming and cycling. Also unique to the annual fundraiser is the kids event, which takes place on a smaller course. Each competition is also divided by age groups to even out the playing field. The entire day of competition takes place on a closed course, which is a rarity in triathlons. You can find more information on the upcoming San Rafael Classic Triathlon by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. It's there you'll also find a link for pre-registration. We move over to softball, and the 3A All-State squads have been announced for the 2019 campaign. The Carbon Dinos are well represented. A first-team selection went to Caitlin Cripps. Caitlin played both pitcher and catcher during her senior campaign, and she accumulated a .650 on-base percentage to help lead the Lady Dinos to one of their more successful seasons in recent memory. Now, Cripps was the only first-team selection for the Carbon Dinos, but if we move over and take a look at honorable mentions, Dakota Crushar, who pitched, played first base, and third base, received the honorable mention for the Carbon Lady Dinos. We take a look at Emory High School, Adrian Childs, who had a phenomenal offensive campaign, playing pitcher and first base for Emory and leading the team in home runs, received an honorable mention. Also receiving an honorable mention for Emory was senior Ambry Bennett. Ambry played in the outfield and also pitched. Congratulations to those players in the Castle Country on outstanding 2018 campaigns and also receiving an all-state selection. The USU Eastern baseball team has announced two summer camps for those who have graduated high school or recently graduated and would like to continue their baseball career. USU Eastern baseball manager Scott Mattson will put on two camps, the first being on June 25th and the second July 13th at Colosmo Carlson Field, the home of the USU Eastern baseball squad. Both dates, again, are open to players that are currently in high school or recent graduates. The cost of the camp is $50 per date, and lunch will be provided. The camp check-in and registration will be at 9:30 a.m. The camp will run from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The camp will provide players with an opportunity to go through skill assessments as well as getting the chance to work with the USU Eastern coaching staff. Those interested in attending must complete the registration form, which you can find at CastleCountryRadio.com or USUEasternAthletics.com. Athletes must also bring a current physical to the camp when they check in. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
It's time for some Major League Baseball talk. I look forward to this every Monday. We get to jump around the big leagues, and we get to talk to a former big league pitcher, Bill Lasky, who is now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants and also the Sacramento River Cats. He joins us every Monday to talk big league baseball. Bill, again, a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, outstanding. I mean, the month of June's coming to the end. Now we're going to start getting some trade talks. This is a fun time of the year. And again, the All-Star game and all the All-Star ballots are being posted. A lot of new names on them. Good time of the year for baseball.
It definitely is, and it's a really good time if you're a Los Angeles Dodger fan. Bill, history was made over the weekend, and I think this is a perfect place to start. Dodgers-Rockies, we knew that this was an important series. The Rockies have been playing pretty good baseball. They had climbed up to second place in the NL West. The Dodgers get three walk-off home runs by three separate rookies. It's never happened in Major League Baseball. Matt Beattie, Alex Verdugo, Will Smith. I don't know what else to say about this Dodger team right now other than they're playing out of this world, Bill.
Phenomenal. It has just been unbelievable. And before the Colorado series, I covered the Giants-Dodgers series, and they were on point. They are dominant in L.A. They have no fear factor, and now you're adding three top rookies that are doing something remarkable for this team. And, you know, you and I talked off before we got on here, and they're going to win this series. They're going to win the NL West by 20 games or more, something that's never been done before, because there's nobody can compete with them in the NL West.
Yeah, and when I look at this Dodger team, I know that there's questions in the bullpen, and I have no doubt that the Dodgers will go all in and fix that. I don't know if they acquire Brad Hand. I don't know what they do at the deadline, but they will fix that. But we take a look at the position players, okay? Austin Barnes instead of Yasmani Grandal. Grandal leaves for Milwaukee. Max Muncy, Kike Hernandez, Justin Turner, Corey Seager when he's healthy, Jock Peterson, Alex Verdugo, Cody Bellinger. For the most part, this is the same team that we saw last year with Chris Taylor filling in as a utility man. Outside of that, there's no Puig. Is it really the Puig factor here? Is this team that much better without him, or is it a combination of things, Bill?
I think it's a combination of everybody playing better. Bellinger, of course. And I just wonder if Puig was that cancer in that locker room, something that they couldn't overcome. Now Bellinger is that star. Now it's more or less his locker room. Things do happen like that. Max Muncy now seems like he's a little bit more competitive. He can play anywhere, third base, second base, first base. The lineup is so strong. Jock Peterson over 20 home runs, only hitting 230. Guys like this are just adding on. And you look at the lineup from 1 through 8, and they're solid everywhere. The middle of the order is just devastating. You get the leadoff guys on. And then the bottom of the order, and we add the nucleus of three new rookies that can compete with them, and it's just, you know, keep the line moving. And who's the new star every game? That's what you want. You don't want the same guy. If you can, you know, facilitate three, four, five new faces in this lineup and gel them in there. Now you got the future coming up for the Dodgers. So the Dodger organization is extremely strong. And I think this team now, as you said, will gear up of what couple things they need in that bullpen. And, you know, I don't really believe they need another starting pitcher. Their starting staff is so strong. So is this the team that will win it? We don't know, because on the other side, the New York Yankees are stacking up too.
But I think you and I can agree, the Dodgers have been NL West champions the last two seasons. I believe this is the best Dodger team that we've seen in a very, very long time, including the two squads that won the National League.
I agree with you. I just think every nook has been checked off before spring training left, and everything possible that this team could do from home runs, the batting average, team hitting, you know, extra base hits, bunting, something they did against the Dodgers, which was surprising, but they laid down beautiful bunts. These are all aspects of a good team, and they're just sort of manufacturing a will to win, and they're getting stronger and stronger. And we'll just see if anybody can slow them down. And right now, nobody's even attempting to even win a series against them. So this is a team to be reckoned with. And I think you and I both said they are going to tinker with a couple things to strengthen that bullpen, maybe another left-hand reliever, maybe a middle guy. But they're not done. They're going to build it a little stronger.
Again, we're being joined right now by Bill Lasky, former Major League pitcher, now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants and Sacramento RiverCats. Bill, let's talk about something that went down involving that other SoCal team, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. They are traveling on the road this past weekend. They go to Busch Stadium. Albert Pujols gets a tremendous reception. You know, it's one of those things where you see the standing ovation. Yadi Molina steps off of home plate, stands in the middle of the field, giving Albert Pujols his moment at Busch Stadium. And that's what baseball's all about. Wasn't that a terrific moment, Bill?
I thought it was a great honor for a man that built St. Louis. He had phenomenal years there. His stats show it, and the fans loved him. Even when he hit the home runs, they were giving him standing ovations, encores. And one of the things that they did after the series was over, and pretty much the whole ballpark was empty, was Pujols and Molina exchanging their jerseys at home plate, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought it was a tremendous, tremendous scene and had to mention that. Okay, let's talk National League here. I want to talk about the Atlanta Braves for a moment because this team, in my mind, Bill, you and I have had many conversations about the Braves in the AL East. They're now 6.5 up on the Phillies. I'm a little bit concerned about the Atlanta Braves, and if I'm a Braves fan, I would be a little bit worried, and I'll tell you why. I don't know if I trust this pitching rotation. Okay, the news breaks that they're sending Mike Fulte back down to the minor leagues. He's going to go to AAA. He was outstanding last season. For whatever reason, the timing hasn't worked. I look at a guy like Julio Teheran, who we've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and at times he shows flashes of brilliance, but at times he's also very inconsistent. The Braves can put up runs. But is it worrisome that they're having this amount of issues with their starting pitching rotation at this stage in the season?
It's a problem, and I think they're trying to fix it sooner than later. And that's one of the things that, you know, you're looking around the National League and American League to maybe pinpoint a trade for a starting pitcher. Again, Bumgarner didn't fare well against the Dodgers, but the Braves have been following him. And just different names have appeared, and this is another thing. Will Keuchel be able to manufacture some good innings and wins for them, and will they go out and get another established starter? This is something they're directing right now, and I think it's a good thing to do, but at the same time, you're telling a lot of your starting pitchers, you better pitch well or you might be out the door too. They're going to get some people. There's no doubt about it. I really believe there's going to be a couple trades being made. They have a very strong minor league system, and there's some players down there that could easily be thrown around to pick up a couple starters. But I believe you and I both said this was their weakness, starting pitching. They're very young. They're very aggressive, but they don't have the discipline to get into the playoffs and go further.
Yeah, I really don't believe they do, and that's the thing. I mean, I think they need to be one of the more active teams, and I think you and I have also had discussions. They're well aware of the situation in San Francisco with Madison Bumgarner, right?
Yeah, I think what's happened here is, you know, teams have been lining up. Last weekend, a report comes out on Saturday night from a Minnesota Twin reporter that just flew off Twitter. Don't be surprised when you wake up Bumgarner's a Minnesota Twin. And it was just a reporter trying to make a remark to the Twins, hey, grab this guy. We need one other starter. That's kind of what we're hearing. And we're hearing a lot of the scuttlebutt from the media more than right what teams are doing. As I told you, I was in Vegas over the weekend covering River Cats and the Aviators, and I talked to a Yankee scout. And he was a pretty high-ranking Yankee scout, and all I've been hearing is Yankees, Yankees here. And I said to him, I said, how does the Yankees and Bumgarner fit in? And he literally said, I'll tell you the truth, he doesn't. He has a beard. He's very aggressive. He isn't a Yankee-type player. But we're trying to win the World Series. We know he's a free agent at the end of the year. If it comes down to picking him up for a couple months, 2-3 months to win the World Series, we'll do it. But right now, in long term, they don't see him as a long term fix for them. And he says they don't feel that Bumgarner is pitching at the tier of what he was years ago. I disagree. His velocity may not be up, but I think his cutter and his slider is just as sharp as it was years ago. You know, it's difficult, and I say this, it's so difficult to pitch or play when every report comes out every day where you're getting traded somewhere. Mentally, it does affect you, and I don't care what anybody says. I think it is affecting Bumgarner a little bit. He's trying really hard. He's aggressive. We saw that with the Matt Muncy thing here in San Francisco a week or so ago, and I just think it's starting to wear on him. And I think the sooner the better. If he gets traded now, he'll get back to that Madison Bumgarner we know. And somebody asked him, hey, you think you could, you know, gear up to be that Madison Bumgarner in the playoffs? And he says it's a different animal, the playoffs and the World Series. And he says, you're damn right I could, because that's the blood I have. So, you know, this is a guy that I follow, and I followed ever since he came up from the minor leagues. Yeah, I would love to have him be in a Giants uniform, but I just think the flavor of it right now is for him to go somewhere else. And to see the Madison Bumgarner, we know that's that competitor and that winner in the playoffs and the World Series.
Well, I think you just put it right on the head, Bill. I mean, we're talking about a competitor, a guy that has won multiple World Series. When you go into a season knowing it's a contract year, knowing that you may be the most valuable asset from a veteran standpoint that a team has, and you know that team's not going to compete, that in itself has got to be tiring on the mind.
It sure is, and you're going into the clubhouse every day. And you're saying, hey, I'm wearing my orange and black. I'm still here. But in your back of your mind's going, when are they going to tap me on the shoulder? When is my agent going to call me and say, it's done, you're out of here? And is it going to be sooner or later? That's the thing. I look at it, if I really want him, I'm grabbing him now so I can preserve the bullets in his arm. I can say, you're only going 80 pitches now. Because I want you in September and October to be strong as a bull. And I think that's kind of what the Giants are doing with him, because as soon as he gets the 90 pitches, they're yanking him. And I think for trade value, they have to do that. They can't be selfish if he's throwing a no-hitter through seven innings to go push that for that nine. I don't think that's what they want to do. I think they really want to preserve his arm and his innings and his pitches to try to get those two or three top prospects that they want.
Bill, last subject before I let you go. Over the weekend, the New York Mets found themselves in the spotlight for all the wrong reasons. A lot of talk on if Mickey Callaway should have a job as manager of this Mets squad after going off on a reporter. I know at the beginning of the season, this was a team that a lot of people had high expectations for whatever reason it hasn't worked. You know, the Cespedes injury, really Robbie Cano has not played top-notch baseball. The Mets are at 37-41 right now, 9 games back of the Braves. When you look at this team, A, have they underperformed? And I'm almost certain the answer to that question is going to be yes. And would a manager change at this stage in the season do this team well moving forward?
I don't think a manager change is going to change this. I think that clubhouse is an array of problems. I think you have a lot of different talent, a lot of different personalities, as well as a fiery manager. And all I can say is, Callaway, welcome to New York, because it's not as easy as you thought it was. And you got some reporters that just want to start trouble and say the wrong words and get that little fire off your spine. And I think that's what's happened. And of course, the pitcher, is it Vasquez? Is that the one that went after the reporter after that?
Yep.
I think that's what it was. And you know, now you got some players and pitchers, you know, trying to defend you. But in that scenario, I think he was wrong by trying to be so abrupt against that reporter. You know, things happen. And you, as a manager, I think you got to be mellow. You take the wins and losses each day. But at the same time, I don't think he's going to last. I really don't. I think he has made so much uproar with the Mets, and you got a new general manager. I just think you might see one of the first managers getting fired from the New York Mets.
And my question to that would be, look, you have Callaway, a former pitcher, a former player. He's only 44 years old. I don't want to talk about maturity because he's a 44-year-old man, and I don't want to disrespect him. Yet at the same time, there is a fine line of what you can get away with as a player and what you can get away with as a manager. I mean, again, you mentioned that Vargas had to be restrained from going after a reporter. That's completely different than a manager.
100% correct. Your manager is your leader. Your manager is the man that's got the voice in the clubhouse. Your manager sets the tone of your players. And right then and there, it showed the immaturity of him. And as we talked to you, you know, months ago about him, first-time manager, always been a pitching coach. It's so easy to walk into that coach's room where you're quiet and you can talk among your coaches when you have that manager's office and you're by yourself. A lot of times you're on that plank by yourself answering questions at the end of the game and your pregame shows, your postgame shows. You're by yourself. You got to manage what you say and what you do. And I just think his temper and his aggressiveness came out of him. And I think the pressure in New York is starting to creep on him. New York is a difficult place to play as yet to be a manager. And there was a lot of high expectations with the Mets. I thought they were going to play a lot better, and they still might. But something's got to happen, and I don't know if firing him and bringing somebody else in, like Riegelman, his assistant coach, it could happen. But again, you know, I just don't know what the Mets want to do. They're not even 500. They have a pretty good team. Is that going to be the right answer? Maybe. But then again, they might just say, hey, let's ride the ship through the year and see what happens at the end of the year, because that division is up and down. They could get hot and still come out of it with a wild card or even win in the division. So we'll see what happens, but I think he's on that line and on that border of being released, and we'll keep an eye on that for sure.
Bill Lasky, former major league pitcher and now an analyst for the Giants and also the Sacramento River Cats. Bill, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work because, well, you guys have done a lot of great stuff at KNBR, I know, over the last couple of months.
Yeah, KNBR, we do a radio show every Saturday. We're on this Saturday. The Diamondbacks we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Tom Candiotti, and Bob Brenly's going to join us, and Kate Longworth, she's a reporter for the Arizona Diamondbacks. So we're going to talk a little D-backs on KNBR this Saturday from 1 to 3 California time. And then on Twitter, at Lasky19, I just kind of post some things, what I'm doing. This past weekend, I was in Vegas for 3 games with the Sacramento River Cats against the Las Vegas Aviators. What a beautiful ballpark, brand new ballpark. About 10 to 12,000 people. They pack it every day. And it's a really nice field. It's the ball flies out of there. You know that. It's the PCL. But it was good baseball. The River Cats won 2 out of 3. The last 2 games, 4 to 3, which were really good pitching games. So it was fun. It was a good time. And something different to go down to AAA to watch baseball and see some of the top prospects. So a good time. And now I'm back into the Giants realm and seeing what they do this 3 days against your Colorado Rockies. The Rockies are in town for 3 days.
Yeah, should be some definitely interesting National League baseball, to say the least, especially with the Rockies coming off of 3 heartbreakers. I want to see the way this team responds, Bill. It's not every day you lose not only 3 games to the best team in baseball, but 3 games in walk-off fashion in extra innings. One comes in extra innings. This is going to be a really telling series, I think, for the Rockies moving forward.
Yeah, and I look at the Giants on my side, and they just won 2 out of 3 from Arizona, and they went extra innings last night, and they could have won that game for a sweep. But it's going to be a good series. I just want to see if the Giants can get out of last place. They're playing better baseball, beating 2 out of 3 of the Brewers. They took 2 from San Diego. They lost 3 out of 4 from L.A., coming back with Arizona 2 out of 3, playing better baseball, and we're going to see what they do on this homestand because they do play Colorado and Arizona, so some NL West competition. But thank you again for bringing me on Monday. I enjoy talking baseball with you. We could do it every day, no doubt.
Oh, it's awesome, Bill. I look forward to it every week. Thank you again for the time. Can't wait till next Monday.
Thank you so much.
Always look forward to that segment every week here on the show. We've got a break for just a moment, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return live from the Auto Forum Studios. It's a Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Live from the KOAL newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. And we're approaching a very big weekend as far as NBA basketball goes. The next 2 weeks, really interesting. Last week we had the NBA draft. We've started to see some moves. I mean, the draft had trade after trade after trade. A lot of it was just for picks. Really no money, or I shouldn't say no money, really no big names being moved around. And now we're gearing up for free agency this weekend. Joining us on the phone to talk about the latest rumblings, we have Jamison Welsh, our Drive Time Sports NBA insider and analyst. Jamison, a pleasure as always. Thank you again for the time.
Oh, not a problem at all. Thanks for having me as always.
Absolutely. And I'm sure you were kind of like me, at some point in time during the draft last week, it became impossible to keep track of all the transactions, all the trades. A lot of minuscule things, a lot of teams buying second-round draft picks. The Jazz managed to do that a couple of times. I know the Lakers bought a couple of picks as well. The big story was Bol Bol slipping late into the second round. It was kind of a different draft. I know every year we say, boy, this was crazy, but this was just different. I'm not going to say it was crazy. It was just odd.
It was kind of odd. I mean, I'm always fascinated by the term, it's a three-team draft, or three-player draft, or it's a five-player draft. I'm always fascinated by that because we know way better by now that there's so many good players deep in the first round, in the second round, or even in the undrafted. So like every year there's always 2 undrafted guys that make teams, usually make playoff teams. Like they're usually on playoff rosters playing rotation minutes. That's why it's always funny. Whenever I hear, oh, it's a 3-player draft, I'm like, all right, man. That term has become so cliche, it's almost getting at hand. But, you know, it is what it is. With that being said, It was an odd draft. It was. There's a lot of transactions, but the reason why there's a lot of transactions, Jordan, because teams do not want to pay the luxury tax. And if they're paying the tax, they don't want to pay the repeater's tax. That's why you see OKC dump two second round picks in the late first to get out of certain spots. You know, that's why you see certain moves take place. You know, it was very fascinating that the luxury tax, you saw and heard, you know, executives saying, you know what, we can't do this, or we're not going to do this, or, you know, we can't keep doing this. I've heard Stan Presti talk about they can't keep paying this tax. So OKC might punt this year when they have Russell Westbrook at last of his prime and Paul George coming back off injury. They might punt this year because they don't want to be aggressive enough to get a big-name guy to pay the tax.
On top of what you just said, I do love the fact that teams are now valuing second-round draft picks a little bit more than they would have, say, 4 or 5 years ago. Because these are non-guaranteed contracts, and that's what people need to understand. So when you see a team purchase a couple of second-round contracts, that's not going to affect the salary cap at all if you don't choose it to be. And if you hit one, and I know last week we were talking about second round picks that have hit, and there is a long list of guys that have hit. I think most recently under the current CBA, Jordan Clarkson's a guy that got paid. He got like a $12 million contract when he became eligible based off a non-guaranteed deal. So, Jameson, I find it interesting that second round picks have seemed to increase in value because teams don't want to pay the luxury tax.
So here's the thing, Jordan. Here's the funny part. Second-round picks are always valuable. The issue is this. A lot of NBA teams, their scouting is, you know, it's kind of subpar. You know, I'm not saying you can make a living off hitting on second-round picks, but if you do your homework right, you're going to hit on them more often than not. The Spurs made a living off getting guys in the second round, whether it was foreign guys or guys that are from here. They hit traditionally getting second-round picks, named mostly Ginobili. That was the guy that, you know, he was, I think, the third last pick of the draft or the second last pick of the draft 1 year. Like, those are the guys that you make your money off of. That's how you – the one thing you can control, you cannot control free agency. You can't really control trades a whole lot. But the one thing you can control is your own assets by drafting. That's one thing teams have control over. And I would put a bigger emphasis on the draft than anything else if I was an NBA team. So if you have the right scouts and you have the right basketball people around you, you can find a lot of good players in the second round. Now, the whole, you mentioned Bol Bol earlier. That's a little bit different situation. A lot of red flags there. A lot of questions. I hope it works out for him. He's actually a good dude. I had the pleasure of being around him his senior year of high school out here at Finley Prep. So I hope it works out for him. A lot of red flags. A lot of questions. I'm almost not surprised he got drafted. Like, if he went undrafted, I would not have been surprised.
Again, our guest right now is Jameson Welsh. He is our Drive Time Sports NBA insider. Jameson, final thoughts, I guess we can say, on the NBA draft. Who was the big winner in your mind?
Atlanta. Atlanta got DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish. If they would have gotten Cam Reddish at four, it wouldn't have been a bad thing. Like, okay, they got a guy that fits what they're trying to do. But to get, you know, to make some moves, get DeAndre Hunter at four, and then to get Cam Reddish at 10, Cam Reddish is a very good ball player who probably shouldn't have been with the Duke. Because Duke already had two ball-dominant guys, and he's a guy that needs the ball in his hands to be at his best. But to get him at 10, and for him, for the system they run where they need guys to be able to handle basketball and be productive, man, he went to a very good spot. I think that Atlanta really had a great night, but, man, Phoenix had a bad night. Phoenix had a very, very bad night. Whenever you draft a guy that's older than your current franchise player, you're in bad shape.
No, I agree, and we had talked about that last week as well. I don't quite know what Phoenix is doing. I'm such a believer in protecting your assets, and what I mean by that is drafting complementary pieces to a couple of times in which Phoenix has actually done quite well in the NBA draft, and I just didn't feel that they have done that at all, Jameson. I look at this offseason for the Suns, and I know that we do have, you know, we have free agency up and coming, so I'm going to leave the offseason in general, I guess we could call it an eye for incomplete, but at the same time, boy, I'm not impressed at all with what Phoenix has done.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I'm very, very interested to see what they do free agency-wise, whether they go after Brogdon, whether they go after Russell. I'm very curious to see, because they approach that draft like they're getting a point guard in free agency. I love Cam Johnson. If that's the guy you wanted, trade back to 17, trade back to 20 again. Like, he was not going at 14. You could have traded back to get him. And also, drafting a guy's going to be 24 when the season starts. Not a big fan of that. But he could play. I mean, he could shoot and he could play. But, man, I think they could have reallocated. They could have allocated their resources a bit better.
Well, let's talk about free agency because, again, this is going to be the big topic. I know over the next couple of weeks, the NBA has decided to start this free agency period a little bit earlier than normal. What's the big surprise that you're, at least the big wow that you're waiting for in the free agency class, James? And maybe something that nobody's really talking about right now, but you can see happening.
How much the role players get paid? We all know the stars are getting maxed. We all know Kyrie's getting his money, Kawhi's getting his money. Guys like Tobias Harris and Jimmy Butler, they're going to get their money. But Patrick Beverley, the Brogdons, like if someone offers Brogdon $20 million a year because Milwaukee has an interesting cap situation, that's interesting. You know, if somebody puts Milwaukee to a, you know, they give Brogdon a high offer sheet with a big money, you know, basically a big poison pill up top to force Milwaukee to make a decision, then what? I'm waiting for that because somebody out there is going to give Brogdon between $15 and $20 million a year for at least 3 years. Somebody's going to do that. Don't know who, looking at Boston, but somebody's going to do that. Patrick Beverley, 30 years old, 30 or 31, this is his last time to cash in. He's going to take the money from the highest bidder. That's just what it is. No team-friendly deals, none of that. He just got off a very, very nice deal, team-friendly deal. He's not doing that again. So I want to know, the role players are always where free agency is interesting at. Harrison Barnes is a guy that I'm very curious to see what happens with. He turned down $25 million. Usually when you turn down a guaranteed money, you have a bigger contract coming. I'm very interested to see where that comes from.
Likewise with Harrison Barnes, I'll throw out Horford in that same conversation, and I think you can kind of relate this to what you just said about Patrick Beverley. This is the last major contract of Al Horford's career. He has to cash in, and I have to believe some of that played into the fact that he walked away from $30 million in Boston.
Well, Horford's different, though. He's at least signed two max deals before, so he's already, you know, he's made a lot of money in his career. Pat Beverley, his last contract was 5 years, $24 million. Was a little bit different, and I think Al Horford's going to Dallas. I think that's, from what we've heard, it's like Dallas, that deal's almost, it's not like complete done, but it's, you know, it's on the verge of being completed. Like, that's kind of one of those wink-wink deals, so something to keep an eye on. But, yeah, I am with you, though. Like, you know, Al Horford opting out of that kind of money in his mid-30s is interesting, but if you have a team going 4 years, 100-plus million, got
to
do it.
You have to do it, absolutely. Let's talk about the Lakers for a moment. The Lakers add another marquee free agent to pair with LeBron James and Anthony Davis?
I actually would, for several reasons. I would go with a big three team because, one, you're going to be resting guys a lot. Like, you're going to be resting LeBron. He's not probably every three – going to play three out of every four games, basically. So you're going to rest him probably 20 games on average. Whatever Kawhi did last year, you're probably going to do the same with LeBron. And with Anthony Davis, you probably want to mix in some load management nights for him as well. When you have a third star, you can do that. When you have a bunch of other role players, it's very difficult to do that, especially a lot of older role players like they're probably going to end up with. So I'll go with a third guy. But here's the reason why I do that and I don't worry about the depth of the team. You can get guys for buyouts. But guys get bought out every day or every year. You get veterans at the buyout, and there's not going to be a more attractive place to get bought out than the Lakers because they're going to be a good team. They have three guys that are going to be a very good team. And, you know, guys going to win a championship and their money's already taken care of. The Lakers will be in a good spot for that. Now, I'm not saying they're going to get a fourth star that way, but they can get a lot of guys to fill out the roster, a couple guys at that point in time of the season to fill out the roster if needed, and they'll be able to go from there. But if Kyle Kuzma's your fourth best player, you're in pretty good shape. Like, if he's your fourth best guy on a team, you're pretty good. And if they're able to, you know, use a mini mid-level and use a couple of savvy veteran picks, they'll be all right.
All right, let me throw four names out there for you then, and you tell me who will sign with the Lakers. Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, Kemba Walker, and, you know, I'll throw D'Angelo Russell out there as well. Wherever there's smoke, there's fire. So those four names, who's most likely to sign with the Lakers?
It's very interesting you bring those names up. If Jimmy Butler does not get offered the max by Philly, which I think they almost have to offer it by now because the way their team is set up, but if they don't offer him the max, I think he walks. I think he's the prime candidate for that spot. Kawhi is so interesting because no one can get a read on him because he doesn't have a big agency and he doesn't talk that much. So no one really knows what he's thinking. He's a wild card. Out of the guards, I mean, I don't see D'Angelo Russell taking less. They'd have to pay his full. For what happened 2 years ago, I don't see him taking less to come back to the Lakers. So I don't see him taking any team discounts or anything like that. So I don't think that will happen. Kemba is fascinating. But, again, if Charlotte offers him $220-plus million for 5 years, I think he stays. So I think Jimmy Butler is the guy if any of those guys are an actual option.
I agree. And to me, that seems like the best fit, especially if you can get a guy at a discount. Even if you were to bring back Rondo, like, I'd be completely fine with that if I'm the Lakers. Jimmy Butler, I think, adds another year, maybe even two, to LeBron James's lifespan in the NBA based on the fact that he can lock up the best opposing player on the perimeter.
Yeah, but no to Rondo. You got to have guys that can shoot the basketball from the outside and defend, and he doesn't do either at this point of his career. I understand the rationale behind it, but I'm at the point where if I'm the Lakers, I'd rather bring back KCP at a decent deal, because at least with KCP, you can at least trade him. If you sign him to a one-year, $8 million deal, you can trade him if need be, if you need to improve the team. No one, if you sign Rondo back, you can't get rid of him. You're stuck with him.
So Darren Collison, there's another name that we can throw out.
What was the name?
Darren Collison.
Oh, Darren Collison is a very good name. I think that would be, if they don't get a third star, if he's a starting point guard next year, you're in good shape, because he's steady. He shoots three well. He defends. He's a really good guy. I'd rather have him. If they're able to somehow get him for the mid level, which I don't think they will, but if they are, you got to get him. I've been hoping they'll get him for a while now. But yeah, I mean, if they're able to get a third guy, especially if it's a wing player, they don't need a great point guard. You just need someone steady that can play defense, get the ball to the right guys, and knock down open shots. You don't need a crazy difference maker at that position.
Jameson, last question before I let you go. We'll jump over to the Utah Jazz. They make a trade for Mike Conley. They do get a couple of second-round picks out of the draft as well. Now it's kind of playing the waiting game. Do they exercise that team option on Derek Favors for next season? All in all, if you're a Jazz fan, you have to be happy with the way the last 2 weeks played out. I know you're not a huge Dante Exum fan, but there's still an element of the unknown. The Jazz managed to hang on to him in the Mike Conley deal. They gave up really three players, two of which were non-factors for this team last season. How pleased would you be with the Utah Jazz if you were a fan?
So, I mean, they made a big move, which they needed to make, and they kept an asset. You did mention I'm not a huge on Dante Exum, but he's still an asset. So whenever you're able to hold on to an asset, that's a good thing. And Conley's a very good player. It's the reason why he's not an all-star. He's not that good. He's really good. You know, he's very solid. He's above average. Not that all-star kind of guy. I would have some controlled expectations, especially at the age he's at and the kind of body type he has. He's had some injuries in the past, so I'd be kind of cautious on that end. But he's very good. Like, he's going to be an improvement for sure. He defends well. He's a very good leader. But there are limitations as well. In the playoffs, they're still going to have some of the same problems. You need a bigger player to make plays at the end of the game. You need a guy that's 6'5", 6'6", up, to be able to make plays when the game is, you know, going down. As good as Donovan Mitchell is, you know, we've seen how that goes. He's not good enough just yet to be able to be that guy at the end of the games. I mean, you know, that may change this year, but from what we've seen, that's not the case. So I'm kind of interested to see if they're done or not. But their second-round pick, Miye One from Yale, that guy can play. That guy's he should make the team, and he may be able to crack some small rotation minutes. He can play. He's a guy that is very overlooked, went to Ivy League school. Very fascinating story. But Jazz fans, if he gets on the court, you guys will love him.
Jameson Welsh, again, our Drive Time Sports NBA insider. You can follow him on Twitter, @TheJameson. That's @TheJameson. Stay up to date on what's happening as far as free agency around the NBA, which I know is going to dominate for the remainder of the week. Jameson, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. We'll do it again next week.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. I want to thank Bill Lasky and also Jameson Welsh for taking out the time to join us. For Travis Anderson, I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.